This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Rolling. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Keep those prices rolling.
Roll back.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are...
For Colored Nerds.
The conversations that black people have.
When white people aren't in the room.
But we record them.
And we put them on the internet.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just... being me.
Yes.
We recently had a live show.
Yes, I was going to say we should get. We just want to give a quick thank you.
Yeah.
To everyone who came.
Yes.
To our wonderful guests, Tracy Clayton.
Yes.
And Rembert Brown.
Yes, you guys were great. They were great.
Yes, and even to everybody who listened in the feed and liked it, we got a lot of tweets about it. We just want to say thanks.
Thank you. It was fun.
Yes, and we're hoping to do it again very soon.
Yes.
I say it like that because you should watch out.
Watch this space. Watch this space.
Never know what's going to come up.
This spring. You never know what's going to come up this spring.
But what else is going on?
Nothing much, man. Honestly, I've just been chilling. I've just been trying to keep my head down and go to work. I really try not to talk too much about what I'm doing because people just ask me when my new show is coming out.
So. Oh, yeah.
I just try to lay low.
Yeah, actually, I had somebody really like corner me and be like, I know you know what's going on. I'm like, I actually don't know as much as you think.
Yeah, no, I don't know as much as people think. So how about that? How about that? How are you doing?
I'm not bad. I'm like, you know, I'm trying to ride this this coffee into a new wave of enjoyment and excitement. Mm. It's not really working today.
I don't like coffee.
But I'm feeling pretty good. I'm actually, you know what? You know what's working more than the coffee to make me excited?
What?
What we're going to talk about today. How's that for a transition?
Okay. All right. Segue.
Today, we're going to talk about Get Out.
Yes.
It is a new breakout horror film from Key and Peele creator Jordan Peele.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're going to dive into kind of the way the film explores like three things. One, white supremacy.
Fave topic.
Yes. It's something we talk about often.
Yeah, comes up.
Also, the way the film plays with point of view is pretty novel for horror films.
Definitely.
And lastly, we're going to talk about the way the movie kind of highlights the black body.
Mm.
So I think this is actually a good point to let you know that if you have not seen this film,
yes,
you will be spoiled.
You will be spoiled. So if you don't mind being spoiled, and we're not talking about in like the put it in the bag variety, okay? We're not talking about some Captain Save-A-Ho type of spoiling. We're talking about spoiling movie plot lines. We don't
exactly
make that much money from this. So if you don't want to be spoiled, then you need to pause. Mm-hmm. Go see the movie and then press play when you come back after you've seen the movie. But if you see the movie, then let's get started.
Yes, yes. And and if you haven't seen the movie yet, one.
You late.
You're really late.
You're late.
You probably already seen spoilers on Twitter.
You probably have seen spoilers on Twitter because people are trash.
But you do need to go see the movie. It's really good.
You do. It's excellent.
Start there.
I mean, I highly recommend it. I am actually going to show it to my children when they start middle school. Right before, night before first school dance. I'll just be like, guys, I have an instructional video for you guys to see. A historical film.
You got to set people up for success.
Got to set them up for success.
But we should tell you a little bit more. Just give you a quick recap, even though the people who've seen it, people who are listening, hopefully have already seen the film. But we're going to tell you a little bit more about the film. Brittany, would you like to?
Sure. So basically, we start with two main characters, Chris, who's played by Daniel Kaluuya of an amazing episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
I was so happy to see him in this film. I didn't even know what to do. He's a photographer. He's also a black man. And his girlfriend, who is this white woman named Rose, who's played by the white girl of all white girls. And I say this with love because she kills this role.
Yeah.
Allison Williams.
Perfectly cast.
I've never seen such perfect casting in my life. Like, especially, too, because she's so good at Marnie on Girls that I swear, I'm like, this has to be how she really is. And she was slightly different, but she dialed into the same frequency in this film. And I was like, girl, you got talent.
That made me appreciate her more, actually.
Yeah, I was like, okay, you got talent. So Chris and Rose have, like, reached the point in their relationship, you know, they've been dating about 4 or 5 months, where it's finally time to, like, meet the parents. So Chris comes home with Rose and meets her parents, Missy and Dean, who are played by Catherine Keener and Bradley Whitford. And you know I love Catherine Keener. I don't know if you know this. I'm in the Catherine Keener hive. I have been for a very long time. And if you do your Googles and you really know your true film work, you know about your Nicole Holof Center white female romantic comedy dramedies, then you know all about Catherine Keener and what this woman is capable of. So she was awesome. And then they also meet Rose's brother, who's a creep. His name is Jeremy. So basically, like, Chris decides to go to these white people's house for the weekend by himself. I didn't say by himself.
First off.
By himself, which was a bad idea. And that idea was underscored so many times by Chris's best friend, Rod, who was hilarious, played by Lil Rel Howery. So basically you have Chris and Rose and Jeremy and Missy and Dean at this, like, estate in wherever, like, surrounded by nothing but whiteness and trees. And, like, Chris just starts to notice that something is a little off. And, like, at first it's kind of, like, just their behavior.
Yeah.
And he feels like they're being super accommodating of him because he's this black man dating their white daughter. But then, you know, some things happen. He starts to notice some things.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that, like, what they have going on in the Armitage household is just, like, way, way deeper than just him being a black man and dating their white daughter.
Yes.
Do you want to say, in short, what they have going on, just to make sure we're all on the same page?
Sure. So this family has developed a process by which they can take over a black person's body to transplant their white consciousness into this black body.
You got to say how they cut heads open.
Yes, they literally cut your head off and, like, transport this, like the white person's brain into the black person's brain, close it all up, and then you got this, like, weird white black sandwich situation going on where the white person is now in control of this black body.
Yeah.
And the other person exists only as a passenger.
Yeah.
Which is whew.
Oof.
So this movie is a deep well.
There's a lot going on here. There's a lot going on here.
And real talk, I actually, like, this is the type of movie I really, like, I want to see it again. I will probably see it again. I don't know if I see it again in theaters.
Yeah. Maybe watch it at home and sit Eve on your knee.
Let me tell you a little tale about how things go in the world. But no, I definitely want to see it again because it's actually really, really textured. Mm-hmm. Like, even now, you know, I've been thinking about it since I saw it, and I just keep realizing, like, little point after little point that, like, you know, he's been, like, popping in to, like, give you an idea of where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
But because this is not a 3-hour podcast,
nope.
Again, we're going to talk about just kind of three central themes and all the stuff that falls under it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
I was born ready.
All right.
This movie.
Let's jump into it. Let's talk about white supremacy.
All right. Let's get down to brass tacks.
So this movie is about white supremacy, but it's approached in a pretty novel way. There's an article I actually will reference probably a couple of times. It's called Why Get Out is the Best Movie Ever About American Slavery.
Mm-hmm.
It came out in Esquire. It's by Stephen Thrasher. Mm-hmm. But, like, he pointed out, the quick thing that I think jumps us into this conversation is he's like, you know, this movie is about the theft of black bodies, but it isn't set in the antebellum South. This is set in the present day in what seems like vaguely New England.
Yeah, it seems like either, like, New England or, like, Northern California. Either way, same type of white people. Coastal, liberal, white elites.
Exactly. That is the thing. This is about liberal, white racism.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I've been always, I'm not always looking for an excuse to talk about it because I feel like there's so many excuses around and sometimes it can feel tiring. But this example, I'm prepared.
Yeah, I mean, and people do not talk about this.
In any real meaningful way.
Yeah, and that's for interesting reasons.
Well, yeah, a lot of people don't want to get fired.
Very true.
Yeah.
You know, self-preservation is a real thing.
Yes, it is.
In addition, you know, like, the thing is, like, there are a lot of white people out there, you know, who consider themselves friends to people of color.
Yes.
You know, who consider themselves, like, who love to use the word ally.
Yeah.
You know? But often don't realize how they're playing into the exact same stereotypical tropes and racism that exists in the world every single day.
Yeah, they just think there's like this huge chasm between them and like quote unquote rednecks or hillbillies, mm-hmm. which first of all assumes a lot about poor people,
yeah.
first of all. And also like what education and money and reading, you know, a couple of Ta-Nehisi articles can do for the white mind.
Exactly.
And like it just assumes a lot of all of these things. Yeah, so they just think that they're really special. They think that they're really special and they think they are beyond reproach and beyond criticism and like, you know, just too noble for racism. And racism is not about nobility. It's about I mean, I was about to say, I was trying to think, I'm like, well, what is it not about?
What is it about?
Yeah, it's just about, well, it touches every corner of my life.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, what is it about? And I'm like, oh, well, everything.
But, I mean, you see this in the movie in a lot of different ways. So, like, early in the movie, they accidentally hit a deer, mm-hmm. you know? And after that, like, this white cop comes and he's talking to Rose, Allison Williams' character. Uh-huh. And then he, like, jumps and asks for Chris's ID.
Uh-huh.
And Allison Williams is like, oh, wait, why do you need his ID?
You know what? And no, and I love that. It was such a good, like, I mean, obviously, like, her true character, like, her true nature isn't, like, fully revealed until, like, maybe the last 10 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
So I love the fact, like, thinking about that moment in hindsight,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying, is so great because it hits the nail on so much, like, you know, what's the word I'm thinking of? Like, I feel like there are a lot of white feminists and white women in general who want, like, cookies and credit for being, like, you know, unafraid to say the thing that everyone else is too scared to say and, like, putting themselves on the line. Like, at the end of the day, a mouthy white woman, like, when a cop is standing there, I don't want to be, don't do that. Don't cape for me. Don't talk to me. Don't do nothing. Just calm down. It was speaking so well to the short-sightedness of, like, imaginary white heroism.
Yes.
Specifically among white women. It was just so good. That moment was so good.
I've actually had literally that exact same experience before.
Really?
Yeah. Like, when I first moved here, I was hanging out with a bunch of my, like, white friends who I kind of met from, like, through work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all went out drinking. And this is, like, we're not too like, far from college. So, you know, when you go out drinking, we were going in,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we went to this, like, after-hours bar. And we stayed and closed it out. And we were leaving. And everybody was, like, I kind of, like, no one had finished their drink, but they were kicking us all out.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody kind of snuck out with their bottle of beer.
Yeah.
And so we were trying to just, like, hustle to the train station, Lower East Side. This cop comes, sees us, and with, like, literally everybody is holding a bottle of beer. And he, like, of course, zooms in on me. He's like, sir, come here.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, ah, shit. One, you got me. Fine. You know, drinking outside, whatever. And of course, it's me you single out.
Yeah.
But then, like, one of my white friends, she's like, oh, why you got to talk to him? Why you singing him out? Everybody here had a drink. And I'm like, yo, just chill. You know what I'm saying? Like, he clearly had it out to give me this ticket. Like, you need to chill out.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a scenario that I want to go as fast as possible and as simple as possible.
Yeah, because you don't need it to escalate.
I don't need you right now. I don't need you in this. I didn't ask you for that.
No.
Like, even the cop was like, come on. Like, you need to back up.
Also, why is she snitching on everybody?
Dry snitched on everybody. Another rule that you might know. Did you hang around hung around some folks of color. But yeah, it was like, it was a really crazy experience. But like that, like, really took me back. And it was interesting because in the car after that, in the movie, in the car after that scene, you know, she clearly was like beaming with pride.
Yes. And she's like, I don't like people. I don't want people fucking with my man.
Yeah.
Because like, who among us has not met? I mean, and I don't want anybody to think I'm coming for them, especially nobody necessarily in my life.
Yeah.
But who among us has not met? Not to say I have. I've never dated a white person in my life. But, or dated that person, or met your friend's boyfriend, girlfriend who was that person. I just want to just take, you know, like when you're a kid and you want your sibling to shut up, so you just grab their lips and press them close. Like, that's all I want to do. I just want to be like, okay, let's just take it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I hate that. I just assume, like, that position assumes that I need any amount of saving from you, that I need your pity. And also, like, it tells me a lot about what, like, there's a way to acknowledge your white privilege, even though I hate the phrase, but there's a way to acknowledge the power that you have in being a white person and, like, use that to, like, make things easier for marginalized people, specifically people of color. But, like, there's a way to do that in a way that doesn't communicate that you pity me.
And it's infantilizing.
Exactly. And I just think that it's like, I just think that that's like, that behavior makes me think that, yes, it's like infantilizing and it's like piteous. And also, like, it's just also coming from a place of wanting to get credit for performing good white personhood.
Yeah.
Which is corny.
Yeah.
To say the least. It could also be potentially dangerous.
Exactly. Like, in, you know, in both of those scenarios, like, that, those situations could have escalated, you know, as a result of, you know, that provocation, you know, to a degree that is, that hopefully one should know by now is very dangerous.
Yeah, like life-threatening.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, you know, people like that, though, like, their status as good white people trumps your safety. You know what I mean? So, like, that, I thought that moment was so perfect.
Yeah. And so it's interesting, like, dealing with this, like, liberal white racism through, like, the voice and the lens of Jordan Peele.
Yes.
And Jordan Peele, I feel like most people, I mean, it's safe to say, most people know him from the Comedy Central show Key and Peele.
Uh-huh.
And Key and Peele is really interesting in terms of, like,
it's a word.
Yeah, so Key and Peele is this sketch comedy show that many people tried to assert that it was kind of going to fill this void left by
the Chappelle show.
Exactly. But I found that depending upon who you're talking to, you have a different relationship to Key and Peele.
What do you mean?
So, for example, so when I'm talking to my white friends, oh my God, it's so funny. Like, Key and Peele, like, it's just so great. Have you seen that? Have you seen the sketch that they did about college football where they're saying all the, like, really, really crazy names?
Mm.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, wasn't that great? I'm like, yeah, that was really funny. It was pretty funny. Oh, have you seen the sketch where it's about a teacher and he's saying the names of white people, but he's saying them crazy?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Trevor, but it's supposed to be Trevor, right? And it's like they're flipping the way that, like, white teachers might mess up a black person's name. And it's like, yeah, I got that. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And when talking to black folks, it's like, yeah, you know, I got it, but it hits everything so hard.
You know what my favorite sketch of theirs is? I think Negro Town is good, but my favorite one, it's literally the one about the Continental Breakfast. Like,
actually, I haven't seen that one.
It's so regular. It's just like this guy who loves Continental Breakfast, and I'm like, wow, that's me and my dad. Yeah, like, my favorite skits of theirs are either like they, I don't know, I just feel like in their comedy, it very much is like hitting on these points that, like, are tired and old to me as a black person. Like, I already know this. Like, it's kind of like, I got this in Race 101, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
After my first 5 minutes of life.
The great thing of, and I, you know, I had to do a direct comparison to Chappelle's show, because I actually don't think the series are as similar as people like to think they are.
White people like to think they are. I was like, I don't know any black people who find commonalities, but yeah.
Yes, as white people think they are. But the thing that Chappelle's show was so great at is that, so you had one joke that was telegraphed, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a central joke, and they would hit it pretty hard. And often those were race jokes. But there were all these little things throughout a particular sketch that, you know, if you were black, you caught, and it was real funny.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
Like, and you didn't necessarily need that to get the humor of the overall sketch.
Mm-hmm.
But if you did catch it, you were with them, and it was like, oh, this is great. Like, he really, really thought this through.
Yeah, like wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Exactly. But with Key and Peele, there's usually, like, it's usually a simpler structure,
mm-hmm.
Which is not, you know, like, not
shade,
to down that.
Yeah.
But their particular type of humor is like, we're going to lean into this joke, and we're going to hit it again. We're going to hit it again, and we're going to hit it again,
yeah.
And we're going to hit it again, to the point where at the end, like...
I'm tired.
And, like, it just doesn't work. And when you're doing that with, like, race humor, quote-unquote,
yeah.
You know, it shows that you needed someone else who hasn't experienced this to really understand every aspect of what you're getting.
Yeah. And so much of racial humor is like nuance. So much of racial experience is nuance. So like when you hit something like that over and over and over again, then like it could communicate a lack of nuance that maybe isn't accurate to the people telling the joke.
Yeah. And so anyway, so that's just Key and Peele.
Yeah.
And like, you know, taking that and then hearing that, you know, Jordan Peele created this like straight up horror movie about race. I'm not gonna lie, like a lot of people, I was kind of lukewarm on the thought.
Oh, I wanted to see the film just because I was like, this is gonna be interesting.
Right?
I was not expecting what I received.
Yes. The trailer showed a crazy amount of promise, right?
Yeah.
The trailer made me be like, wow, okay. I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna show up for this. But coming out of it, it's also interesting that, you know, Jordan Peele, who did this work with Key and Peele, created something that was so great. I mean, that seems kind of like reductive to his, like, maybe his talent. But anyway, that's not the point of what I'm getting at. The point is, what was surprising also is who Jordan Peele is as a person. Like, Jordan Peele is married to Chelsea Peretti.
Yes, who's a white lady.
She's also an actress and comedian. You might know her from like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
In addition, he's a biracial man.
Yeah, and his mom is white. So white women feature heavily in his like personal, like family life.
Yeah. And this movie is actually one of the most searing indictments of like white women and white feminism I've probably ever seen. I was shocked. I mean, I like, this is a point I've kind of been talking to everybody out. And as I was talking to somebody recently, they also brought it up. And I was like, oh my God, I'm the only one who takes this away. But like, I have never been in a theater. And we talk all the time how we like to go to like Court Street.
Yep.
We like to go to places where people talk at the screen.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like the communal aspect of movie watching is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I have never been in a theater where the entire theater has cheered.
Yes.
Because a white woman got shot.
No.
I have just absolutely never seen that before. It was a mixed crowd, I will point out.
Yeah.
It was mostly black, but it was a mixed crowd. And everyone, there was a level of like relief like, you know, this woman was getting her comeuppance. And, you know, that like those parallels and the way they approach making that point was just, like, shocking.
Wait, did any white people walk out of your showing?
No.
White people, too, walked out of my showing, but they only walked out at a point where, like, the slavery and the brain switching didn't bother them. But once, like, these, like, white 2017 slave owner murderers,
yeah,
like, slave catchers,
yeah,
like once they started getting murdered, then they were very uncomfortable.
That's too much.
And I was like, wait, so the slavery and the brain switching and the kidnapping,
yes,
and the deceit, all fine, all fine. This is all fine. This was okay. They were like, I'm with you for the first, you know, hour and 30 minutes, but that last 15 just painful. I'm like, these are they're modern day slave catchers.
Yes.
Who are focusing on like a bizarre form of like reverse, like bizarro eugenics.
Yes.
And them getting murdered is the thing that you cannot deal with.
Yeah. Interesting. I did talk to one white person and they basically were like, and this kind of sums it up. They were like, oh, I didn't realize it was going to turn into a revenge movie at the end. And I was like, I was like, you know, I didn't either, but I was happy it did. And like, it was a cool conversation. That person took it in stride. Like, they loved the movie. But it was like, you know, I do think a lot of white people who watched the movie had to probably sit in some feelings that they have not had to sit in a theater before ever in life.
But that also makes me wonder, though, like going back to the thing about Jordan Peele having like white women feature heavily in his personal family life. Like, what the fuck? Like, Chelsea Peretti, like, how is she? Like, how are you? I think she's pregnant now. Like,
yeah.
How
yeah,
are you chill that. Right now? Like, where are you emotionally? Like, what?
Like, I feel like
it's very bold to make Get Out with a white wife.
I mean, to put a button on like why this feels so like novel, I guess there's like, especially with your liberal white friends, and if you're a person who, you know, has had an interracial relationship before, there is like an outstanding pressure that you can feel to, and you see this in the film, you see this reflected in the film, to make that person feel good about their standing in relationship to blackness, you know, in terms of like, oh, you know, you're doing a great job of supporting me. You're doing a great job of like, you know, standing up for me. Like, you're one of the good ones.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's really interesting to have this movie come from someone who has probably, you know, and I'm projecting a little bit, but has probably experienced that type of pressure in many ways, you know, maybe from, you know, their parental relationship, or maybe even from their personal relationship. And not saying that like those two people maybe have exerted that pressure, but society itself can create that narrative, you know, like you want to make sure you're reinforcing that you've chosen good people in your life.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's just really wild to have such a searing indictment of that. On the screen from someone
who's still living the lifestyle,
who's still deep in the life,
and
to me that like that's why I think this is such a like that is part of why I think this is such a good movie that explores like the types of white supremacy that don't often get discussed, because that is a type of white supremacy that like to have society exert a pressure on you that you always need to be providing positive feedback to the white people in your life.
Yeah, not even just society, but like the fact that that's a dynamic that can exist in your relationship. In the Stephen Thrasher piece from Esquire, there is this phrase that this guy Hari Ziad, I think he's a writer, calls white partner fragility. Like, I really appreciate, like, you know, I liked so much that in this movie, while you're exploring these like these greater white supremacist goals, you know what I'm saying, such as developing technology so that you can inhibit a black body, like I also appreciated that, like, the white supremacy on like the interpersonal scale, not just the microaggressions from like your partner's parents, and not just from like, you know, the people that you're going to meet at their dinner parties, or from your coworker, or from your boss, or, you know, whoever, but also like specifically someone with whom you are like in a romantic relationship with. And white partner fragility is kind of like, well, it's described here as, it's described in the Thrasher piece as the propensity of black people with white intimate partners to cape for them and be more sensitive about protecting their partner's whiteness than they are about expressing their own black humanity and anger.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I haven't dealt with that before, but I have been in relationships with black men. I've dealt with that in, as it can pertain to maybe misogynoir. Not specifically, not just sexism, but like specifically like the weight of sexism as it relates to also being like specifically a black woman. Yeah. I've had moments where like it would have been too much for me to explain to my partner at the time where they fucked up and how they fucked up and what the lay of the land really looks like.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of like, it's easier. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but I could definitely see how it's easier in the moment to be like, no, it's okay. Like, no, I understand. I get it. Blah, blah, blah. Like, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It's so much easier to do that, I imagine, than it is to be like, no, actually, you didn't support me. And these, here's some other shit that you said that's really gotten on my fucking nerves. And I don't feel like you respect me and you don't see us as equals.
Yeah.
That's a harder conversation to have, especially if you have some other types of romantic feelings wrapped up in your relationship with this other person. But like, I like that Get Out like explored that while also exploring, like, you know, slavery.
Yeah. And so I actually think that's a good spot to take a break.
I'm with that.
Radio Andy.
Hey, it's Andy Cohen. Join me on Andy Cohen Live, where it's just you, me, and some of the world's biggest celebrities.
Paris Hilton.
Chelsea Handler.
Seth Rogen.
I love you, Miley. Thank you so much.
You can listen to Andy Cohen Live at home or anywhere you are. No car required. Download the SiriusXM app for over 425 channels of ad-free music, sports, entertainment, and more. Subscribe now and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back.
We're here.
We are talking about Get Out.
Get Out.
And we're exploring a few themes, you know, a few themes from the movie.
Yes, yes, yes. So we already talked about sort of like the insidious and grotesque nature and movements of white supremacy.
Yes.
But now I think it's time for us to like discuss like something that I found really refreshing about the film, which was the way it really utilized point of view, like really, really specifically the point of view of the protagonist, Chris.
Yeah. No matter who you are, it puts you at a very clear point of empathy with Chris.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's a lot of shots of like handshakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see the handshake between him and her father. You see the attempted handshake between him and Andre, the character played by Lakeith.
Oh, Lakeith Stanfield from Atlanta.
Yes.
He's an incredible actor.
Yeah. I mean, he killed this movie. Like,
yeah,
he was only in it for a bit.
Oh, my God.
But he was so good. And you also see it in, like, the way people, like, look at each other. Like, just in the sense of, like, so, and again, this is, like, your experience and Chris's point of view. So when you see a handshake, you see him looking at the handshake to see how it's going to, you know, see how it's going to go, how it lingers. But you also see, you see other people's faces from his viewpoint. So this lets you know that, one, I'm supposed to be experiencing this movie with this guy.
With this black man.
Yes. How often does that happen?
Like, never. Never? Never?
Yeah. Never? Never, never?
Never.
Never, never?
Nope.
Like, that is just so transformative, to be straight up with you. The feeling that you have to fight, even as somebody who might empathize with a black character, that you have to fight for that empathy because you don't get enough of their interiority to really understand what's happening with that. This is not that movie. You know what's going on with him. You know how he's feeling. You know when he's afraid. You know when he's angry.
Yeah.
The thing about it that's going to sum up to something relatively simple is that in this movie, he's a full person.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Like, what?
Like a full regular person.
Yeah.
But he's like not some sort of pathologized symbol. like a, what's the word I'm thinking
he's not
of?
A perfect black man.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not some perfect black superhero.
Yeah.
He's just like a regular guy who's a really good photographer. And he's like cute and like, you know.
He's kind of quiet.
He's kind of quiet. Yeah. You see, but he also like, I mean, this is also like speaks a lot to Daniel Kaluuya's like performance, but like he is really good at like communicating his interior life through his face.
Yeah.
Where even if he says very little, you're like, I will say like he and Daniel Kaluuya and Allison Williams had really good chemistry.
Yeah.
Like I actually found that like even though they're very, their characters are very different people even at the outset, mm-hmm. I could see, I could like, my brain started to fill in a backstory wherein they relate to each other and they get along and I sort of see how their relationship could come together.
So like this movie centers a black person in what is essentially like a more, like in essentially a white space, you know, mm-hmm. essentially like a black person, and the horror comes from this white space.
Yeah.
And it made me think of a movie, or actually, real talk, you thought, you like mentioned the movie, mm-hmm. but I kind of went back and like dug deep in it a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But you mentioned Candyman.
Yes.
Which is another classic movie.
Yeah.
You know, well, some would say. Another classic.
A classic black horror film, I'd say.
Exactly. Yeah. Get Out is almost a perfect foil for that.
Uh-huh.
Because Candyman, it does this work that's often problematic of centering a white woman in a black narrative. So, like, mm-hmm. you have this white woman who is, like, diving deeper into poor blackness.
Cabrini Green yeah. in Chicago.
Like, literally, like, it's this, like, there's a lot of, like, ruin porn in there. Like,
yeah.
you know, it's just, like, it's like, there's a lot, like, I do like Candyman.
Yeah.
But I forgot, damn, how problematic that shit is.
Yeah. Well, there's always something, I mean, like, a narrative about black vengeance in the early 90s was exciting. It still is kind of exciting to yeah. a certain extent. But the way it played out was interesting.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Candyman, so like I guess if you haven't seen Candyman, a quick recap
uh-huh.
is it's about this white woman who is, she's basically doing what seems to be like postdoctoral work.
Mm-hmm.
She's like writing a research paper about folklore, and she gets drawn into this specific story about this like legend, Candyman, who mm-hmm. exists to basically terrorize and murder the black people in Cabrini Green projects, which don't exist anymore.
Nope.
Actually. And she gets kind of pulled into that narrative and eventually becomes like the center of it. And it's her trying to like get out and manage that.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is literally, again, the complete opposite of that. So like you get Chris as this protagonist. He's going and discovering this very white world and experiencing the horror of what it means to be a black person
yeah.
in a extremely white space. And there's two like really fun things about that in particular. So like Candyman is obviously a more like fantastical, like mm-hmm. There's a more fantastical relationship to the horror. It's about this like guy who it's legend who does not exist. He existed in like at a time in which slavery existed, and like it's like carried over today.
Uh-huh.
But the horror, like most of the horror in Get Out is from like real world shit. Like the most of the actual tension
yeah.
existed in things that I found very familiar.
Yeah.
I just got to take a step back. Because, like, I felt for that brother in many ways.
Yes.
But I have probably had almost every single one of those types of interactions just at one point or another. You know?
Yeah.
That white person who comes to you who thinks they're, like, so chill with you. And is like, oh, man, you play basketball, right?
Yeah.
You know? Like, because I'm a black man who's, like, maybe decently tall, you know?
Yeah.
Or who instantly starts trying to, like, drop some slang.
That's the worst. That's the one that embarrasses me probably the most. I think that one, that without a doubt, embarrasses me the most.
It's
the
like,
most.
Where'd you get that from?
Well, because the thing is that, like, employing slang requires, like, a degree of verbal dexterity. And mm-hmm. I happen to think that I deal in that for a living. Yeah. So the fact that I'm like, okay, I literally talk, which pays my bills. So don't come at me with your poorly constructed, poorly used slang. And also, too, you don't have the range. You just yes. don't have the range. And you're embarrassing yourself on multiple levels by speaking to me in this way.
Yeah.
The other thing that scene got so right that never, I think, gets right in the sort of, like, fish out of water, black person in a white space movie. Like, it's something that they typically get wrong. Like, I think that in narratives where black people are entering white spaces, particularly moneyed white spaces, we're supposed to believe that the fear is that they are somehow inadequate.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like whether they're not smart. Usually if it's a school, they're not smart enough. If it's a job, you know what I'm saying? They're not working hard enough or they're not going to be accepted. And then also like, or they're just, they don't, they're poor. They don't have enough money.
Class.
It's a class thing. And it's so funny because that speaks to white people's fears.
Mm.
And how nice for you that your greatest fear is being poor. Your biggest fear. That is the largest fear that you have.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, actual poverty is not something to fuck with. Like, I'll joke around about that. That's like something that keeps a lot of people in, like, for us to be one of the richest countries on earth, for us to have as many people living in poverty as we do is shameful.
Yeah.
Poverty is something that affects every single facet of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But white people don't necessarily fear poverty. They fear, like, arriving at a lower social status than they currently occupy. So, like, yeah, I think about, like, what's that movie? Finding Forrester? Remember that one, the Gus Van Sant film?
Yeah.
With Rob Brown and... what's the
Sean
guy?
Connery.
Yes, and Sean Connery.
You're the man now, dog.
Exactly, exactly. So, like, Sean Connery is this, like, old recluse writer, and basically he forms this relationship with this black boy played by Ron Brown, who is, like, a high school basketball star who starts attending, like, an elite prep school. And so much of that film, like, so much of his discomfort, this boy's discomfort, is supposed to come from, I'm supposed to believe that it's coming from the fact that he's poor,
mm-hmm.
and I guess ostensibly, you know, and black maybe second there, but like that's not the case. Like more often than not, black people's greatest fear and being around a whole bunch of white people is someone saying something like disgraceful and ugly and racist and rude and embarrassing you and making you feel small.
Yeah,
that's actually like a black person's greatest fear in a white space. Like now, granted, like. I have some class privilege, but I go into more conversations like fearing that someone's going to say something that's going to offend me identity wise rather than talking about like a whole bunch of rich people shit that I don't really know about.
Yeah.
That's like you can Google that.
Yeah.
I can't Google whatever the fuck is going to make you stop acting a fool and talking to me wild crazy like these white people did to Chris at Rose's parents' party.
Yeah, and it's interesting also, like, it was also so real, like, that because of that, you saw him really seeking out community, you know? Like, he, like, after that, you know, he goes and he's trying to talk to folks. He's, like, trying to talk to Andre, like, yo, like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's, like, he says, he verbalizes, he's, like, I just get really stressed out at, like, you know, situations where I'm around all these white folks. And, you know, that's when you see, like, Andre give that, like, that face. Like that is a real element of like, you know, why when you are in a white space and you see another black person, that head nod is immediate.
Yes.
You know, that like, hey, I see you. I got if it go down, come find me.
That's the thing. You took the words right out of my brain. If it goes down. And like normally, like in most social settings, like I feel like I'm pretty fortunate in that like if it goes down, meaning if someone says some wild shit, we can leave.
Yeah.
I can look at you. We can laugh. Or which like whatever it is, we can have a secret black people moment.
Exactly.
Where we're like, or one, if I decide I'm going to say something, you're going to back me up. But like the other case scenario, like maybe worst case scenario is that something dangerous will happen. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very funny to me, again, that white people think that, like, my greatest fear is that I'm somehow inadequate instead of, like, my greatest fear being that you're going to embarrass me or hurt me in some way by something that you say. But then there's also the other great existential threat, literally existential threat, that you will do something that could cost me my life.
Yeah.
Like, which is, again, like, white people cannot conceive. Many white filmmakers cannot conceive of that as being the, like something that I'm carrying with me all the time in their presence. I wanted to talk about the final scene of the film when Rose, like she's like supposed to be dying on the pavement. But of course, like any good like horror movie villain, she like comes back alive. So Chris has to like choke her to death.
Yeah.
And it's kind of stressful, too, because like, you know, up until a couple hours before then,
he was fighting for her.
Yeah, he was fighting for her. That was his woman. Like they were going to make it happen. They were, you know, going to be the new Instagram team swirl couple of the month.
If she would have found them keys.
If she would have found them keys, exactly. So he had to get on top of her, and he was trying to choke her to death. And you could see he was conflicted, and she was really trying to play on that.
Yeah.
But then, and so I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, you have to choke this bitch out. Like, you have to get it done. You have to get it done. Everybody in the theater was like, choke the bitch!
Yeah.
But then we see, I see these, like, blue and red lights flashing, and I'm like, fuck. Like, the police are here. This house is burning down. All evidence of these crazy psycho racist people are being like burned to shreds. Like, I was sitting there thinking, like, okay, he's gonna get arrested. He's gonna have to go to court. Is there any evidence? Is there anybody to corroborate this? What can we do? What can we do? And then, very fortunately, like, you know, the camera changes position and we see like a police car drive up. But then the door opens and it says airport. And that's when you know that Chris's best friend, Rod, is there to show up and like save the day. Which to me felt like an unlikely ending, but then I was like, okay, it is a movie. I did just watch somebody say that they had some technology that could switch brains. So like, let me suspend my disbelief for a second. But of all, it's wild to me that of all the stuff that I saw in the movie, like the very last scene, like this black man getting to survive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This whole thing, like this black man being met by some sort of law enforcement.
Yeah.
Like, you know, having that be a relief for him was a shock. And also, like, every single black person in the theater knew what it meant.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
There was some, like, real tension there.
There was some exactly. Every single black person in the theater, we know what it looks like when a black man is on top of a white woman trying to choke her to death, and you see these blue and red flashing lights pop up. That scared me, and it broke my heart. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, Chris survived to this moment, and, like,
and now it's over.
And now it's over. Like, it's it. This is it. And the original ending of the movie was supposed to be that he was supposed to get arrested and go to court.
Interesting.
Yeah. But then people were like, that's too bleak. And I was like, what's funny, though, is that's real.
The way life works out.
Life. But, like, that's how you knew the point. Like, the point of view. Like, normally at the end of a movie, like a horror movie, like when the police show up, do you know what I mean? It's because, like, the bad guy's been caught and blah, 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 blah.
Safe.
But in this film, exactly. It's a sign that you're safe. It's usually a sign that, like, a white woman who is, like, in her house with a baseball bat trying to kill an assailant is finally safe. Mm-hmm. And in this film, it's like that. It was, like, one last, like, almost like a jump scare.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was like one last jump scare in the film that also let me know that we were specifically watching the story of a black man. Even watching Allison Williams' face.
Yeah.
She started to put on her, like, oh, please help me. I'm a poor defenseless white woman. He's choking me. This black man is choking me. She started to get that look on her face. And I was like, this movie is too good. But yeah, like that last scene, like, that almost broke my heart.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, the amount of tension, like, I found myself, so I went to go see you with Carla, and I found myself, like, I grabbed her, like, thigh. And I was like, fuck.
Yes.
Like, because the when the movie kind of shifts into, like, revenge narrative a little bit, like, after he breaks free, there's so much, it's so cathartic. Like, seeing him, like, break out and, like, honestly just, like, kill these people who have basically tortured him for the past, like, however many days he was down there. And so you feel like, oh man, this is really about to get ripped away from me with some real tragic shit that I experienced on like a day-to-day level.
Yep.
It made me really happy, and I felt a sense of relief when that didn't happen. And that scene mirrors almost directly to another iconic horror movie.
Uh-huh.
Which is Night of the Living Dead.
Oh yeah, black protagonist.
Exactly. So Night of the Living Dead, if you don't really know, it's another movie you should actually go back to see. It's actually really, to be a very old horror movie, it really, really stands up. It's really, really good. But it came out in 1968. This is a film that basically, like, created the idea of, like, zombies, what would become zombies.
Oh, like in the popular, like, lexicon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and in the final scene, like, they've been going through this work of, like, trying to, like, you know, kill and protect themselves from the zombies. And there's, surprisingly, shockingly, there's, you know, this black man is what becomes a protagonist. Like, you start out through the lens of this white woman, but it ends up being this black man, Ben, who's, like, making it and killing it. And, like, every single, he almost dies, like, five or six times in the movie. But he makes it all the way to the end. And he hears, like, a group of people who he knows are, like not zombies, basically.
Uh-huh.
And he comes out, and he's, like, trying to be like, hey, I'm, like, you know, I'm here, like, I've made it. And they immediately shoot him in the forehead and kill him.
Yeah, that's about right.
And it was like, and for me, like, it was supposed to be they thought he was a zombie because he came out very exasperated.
Yeah.
But that's also, like, a very similar relationship to, you know, what we were anticipating for the limited amount of time that a black person gets to communicate, I need help from you, before they are perceived as a threat.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what, like, that felt like the same wavelength. And if, like, I don't know, I don't think it was a, I mean, obviously there's some crazy parallels in real life right now that like telegraph that scene.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that it also felt like kind of a callback a little bit to that particular moment where you finally do have another black male protagonist and he gets all the way to the end and he's able to feel that feeling of safety.
Yep.
After making it through this like harrowing experience.
Feels like justice.
How do we get that? I feel like...
Oh, never.
Yeah, basically.
Never.
So our final thing that we're going to talk about today is kind of this the idea of like how the movie explores the black body.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's no secret from the plot. Like the black body is kind of a central... It's like almost the most valuable thing.
It's a pot of gold, man.
In the movie, you know. And they telegraph this like very early on. Like, you know, they're walking Chris through Rose's parents' house, the Armitage house. And, you know, they point out this picture of this white man who's like a track star. And they're talking about, he tells a story of how like Jesse Owens.
Oh, yeah. Like beat him out for like Olympic qualifications or something like that.
Yeah. So he talks about the qualifier, and then he eventually talks about this narrative of Jesse Owens like going and like showing like as this black man, I'm gonna beat out this Aryan race that like Hitler was trying to hold up in high regard. And that was kind of like one of the first pieces that I actually did not connect that like was gonna be very important in the film.
That one put me on high alert. As soon as he said that, I was like, Grandpa's coming back. I don't know how. Grandpa's coming back. I was like, this story gonna come back around.
Yeah. But like the black body centers like so heavily in this film and in a way that's very different, you know, than like other movies, like and specifically like, again, to come back to Candyman, you know, like, so you have this black man who lived in the South or who lived in Illinois, but at a time when slavery still existed, he was free, but he had a relationship with a white woman, which, you know, obviously was like taboo at the time.
I mean, nothing worse than miscegenation among freely moving black people. Nothing worse than that.
And so as a result of that, they like torture him. You know, they cut off his hand and replace it with a hook, and like jam it in there. They, you know, they cover his body in honey and like have bees attack him. And throughout the movie, his body is seen as this like source of horror. And he's using his body, he's using the hook, and like at one point he like opens his chest and you see like the rib cage and stuff like that. His body, his physical black body, is this manifestation of horror for this white woman, right? But in this movie, the black body, as fucked up as it is seen as like this thing to aspire to. Like these people are aspiring to steal, you know, black bodies for their, you know, quote unquote inherent gifts. Yeah. Let's take a... I need to take a drink of water on that.
It's so... I thought that was really sharp because, like, in general, like, that's what slavery was. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're going to find, like, the strongest, you know, physical people that we can to help build our civilization and, like, you know, grow our crops and, like, harvest them and care for our children and feed them with their bodies. Like black bodies were birthing, breastfeeding, growing food, building things for centuries in America. Like that's why, you know, shit, that's how the White House came to be. Like that was like a valuing of black labor and black physicality in a different way.
Yeah.
I would assume of the characters, the white older characters who are participating in like the essentially the slave auction for Chris, I would assume that those white people thought that, like, instead of me snatching you back to my house to like wash, you know, clip my toenails and wash my floors for free, like I'm paying you a compliment.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's way, which to me points again to like white liberal racism. They like in their minds, it's like, well, I want to inhabit your body. Like, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Feel good about that.
Like,
right?
You should feel really good about that. Like, I'm not trying to make you my slave.
Yeah.
I just want to put my brain in yours and operate and go through my life as you, and where your skin is my skin and your eyes is my eyes. I thought that was so sharp, like showing like the contrast and like also a lot of the commonalities between like white racist attitudes during like antebellum slavery and also present northern liberal white racist attitudes.
Yeah. It's also when you think about like reprogramming, like how you might reprogram someone or what it means to reprogram a black person.
Yeah.
So there's this movie. Woo. I love this movie, by the way.
I think I know what you're going to talk about.
It's called Tales from the Hood.
Classic.
Classic black movie. Like, this is a black horror movie. I actually don't like to count Candyman because Candyman's so fucked up.
Yeah.
But Tales from the Hood, I mean, Tales from the Hood is pretty fucked up, too.
Yeah, but I mean, Tales from the Hood is written and directed by black people, though.
Yes. Which, and like, you can tell that from, like, the narrative.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah.
Go see Tales from the Hood.
It's so good. So good.
Really good. Came out in 1995. I'm going to spoil one of the vignettes for you.
I think that's okay. The movie's been out for about 20-something years. So,
yeah.
Okay.
You've had time.
Yeah.
But so the movie is a series of vignettes, kind of like in a similar way that Tales from the Crypt is, right?
Yeah.
And one of those vignettes is about this criminal named Special K.
Yes.
He is a gang member. I think he also sold drugs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, classic,
classic,
quote unquote,
like L.A. gangster 90s, yeah. You know.
And he's kind of portrayed as this like irredeemable soul.
Yes.
And he finally is like caught and he goes to jail and they like strip him down.
Mm-hmm.
And like they remove all his clothes, and there's this black woman. Oh man!
No, they take him to jail, but then he goes to a special unit.
Yes, in that jail.
Yes, and then there's like an older black woman there who like, and not in like say tactics or beliefs, but in like physical aesthetics, mm-hmm. I think is meant to remind you of like Angela Davis.
Yeah,
yeah. This is like, I mean, in the 90s this was radical, but like now you probably classify that all this is like some Hotep shit.
Oh, it's very much some Hotep shit.
But yeah, she like introduces him to this like white supremacist like skinhead from prison who like tells him like, oh yo, I fuck with you because you kill black people too.
Yeah.
Like, because that's what Special K does. He's a gangbanger. He's like killed some other people, some of his peers. And so he's like, and she's like, what makes you any different? What makes you any different from the skinhead? Like, she's like, okay, you have one chance. Like, you can do this thing. And maybe, like, this, you can get out of prison or whatever. Like, maybe you don't have to, like, you know, whatever. I don't know. No, he has, like, one last chance to do something, like, to avoid some sort of bad consequence.
Mm-hmm.
So they, like, do, they have this whole scene where he's, like, in this, like, dungeon cellar thing, almost like sensory deprivation chamber.
Yeah.
He's, like, laid on a table. He's got all these things covering his nipples and, like, suction cups and tubes and all this shit.
They put a tube down his throat, like, what looks like just freakishly far. It's
yes.
Like really disturbing.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then they show him, they make him watch all these images of like lynchings and beating and the civil rights movement and the KKK. Yeah. Again, we said this is some Hotep shit.
Yeah,
it's a good movie though.
Yeah, it was basically Eyes on the Prize. They made him watch Eyes on the
Prize.
Yes,
they made him watch Eyes on the Prize. But all this was meant to like deprogram him.
Yeah.
It was like some very Kendrick Lamar, Blacker the Berry,
Drop Squad type
stuff. Yeah, type stuff. But yeah, as soon as Chris got into the basement of the Armitage's house, I was like, Jordan Peele trying to get me to think about Tales from the Hood.
Yeah, but it was interesting because it was like they were reprogramming him in like a different way, away from, like, they were reprogramming him to have less of a need for his own personhood.
Yep.
Whereas, like, you know, in Tales from the Hood, they were trying to change this man's like behavior and the way he thought,
because mm-hmm.
He was a danger to society.
Yeah.
In this way, they were trying to make him, like, remove the person from him and make him a receptacle. Which I found, like, I found it really deep in terms of how liberal white racism wants you to quickly get to the idea that they understand you,
mm-hmm.
so that you can do more receiving and complimenting and, like, praising of them.
Yes.
And if, like, that really felt like they were trying to, like, just reprogram him to beat this. Obviously, it changes a little bit. But, like, reprogram him, Chris, to, like, to be ready to receive this white person and feel good about it.
Yep.
Because this is a guy who values him and his body.
Yep.
And his thoughts and his eyes. And I thought that was like, whoo, I thought that was like fascinating and some shit that you just don't see very often. And actually that like cues up this other piece, like of way that I was kind of like thinking about this. And it was kind of described in the Stephen Thrasher piece that we actually referenced earlier in Esquire, as like if it feels like this, these weren't his words, but it feels kind of like this final stage of cultural appropriation, like the need to actually like physically take over the black body.
Mm-hmm.
And in so like in the Esquire piece, he actually mentions, he says like, Get Out is really a masterwork of Afrofuturism, because it's kind of like this, and Afrofuturism is this artistic and scientific framework for like thinking about like race and technology.
Mm-hmm.
But he says like Jordan Peele's horror film is about the theft of black bodies, but it's like not committed to slavery directly. Like mm-hmm. it's removed from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was like really interesting to think about, like how, you know, we talk a lot about cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
And seeing like this like almost somewhat felt like maybe like the final endpoint of what maybe that could look like in some sort of like dystopian future.
Well, the thing is about that is like, I agree with that. And I had dinner with a friend two nights ago, and she said that she was like, oh, this movie totally reminded me of cultural appropriation. I was like, what? And then she was like, yeah, like you want all the attributes, but you don't want any of like the agency or the personhood. You want all of the black features and none of the blackness.
You want to be a nigga, but you don't want to be a nigga.
Exactly. And like, and I do agree with that. But then also, like, to borrow a word from Ta-Nehisi, who has never been on the show, but is like always welcome. The plunder of the black body, though, it's like taking over our bodies is like, it's like a return to form. It's like a callback. Because if you think about it, you know what George Washington had in his mouth instead of his own damn teeth?
Slave's teeth.
Slave's teeth. You know why? This white man was too ridiculous to learn how to brush his own goddamn teeth. So they got nasty, they rotted, they fell out, and he had dentures. He wore dentures every day with slave's teeth in them. Like, to think about like having, you know, black women act as wet nurses up through the last century. We grew the population, fed the population. What's what I'm thinking about? Even if you talk about the diaspora, like testing birth control in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, American society is always like trying to use black people's bodies for its advantage anyway.
Yeah.
So like, you know, why not switch brains? You know what I mean? It's kind of like tale as old as time.
Yeah.
It's like the next step in plastic surgery in a way. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like the same way that like people think about silicone or injections or something like that. Because it is like silicone is a disposable property. It's just basically a type of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And like, like having this narrative in 2017 where basically like black people's bodies are just like a type of plastic is like, That's some real shit. That's some wild shit.
So if you haven't, you know, if you for some reason listen to this before you saw the film.
Yeah, you're wrong. Shame on you. It means you don't listen. You can't follow directions. But
now go back and watch that movie. But I think also like go back and watch it again. Because I'm ready to go back and watch it again. Because I know there's stuff even within this that, like, I've missed. And also, if you haven't noticed, we referenced, a few movies that you should also check out.
Yeah.
Tales from the Hood, Candyman.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah. And there's some other movies, too, that I think we'll include links to in the reading that I think could also, like, having knowledge of those films could also, like, enrich your experience of understanding and really taking in all the magic that is Get Out.
Yeah.
I gotta say this, man. 2017 is gonna be full of surprises because Jordan Peele got me feeling inspired, refreshed, reactive, ready to get going.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, shout out to Jordan Peele. I did not anticipate this from you, sir. I don't mean that as shade, but I am very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And I mean, right now, I'll be in line for whatever the next thing is, as long as it's not Keanu.
I don't want to talk about Keanu. I don't want to talk about Keanu.
So, This has been another episode of For Colored Nerds.
Yes, For Colored Nerds. If you want to support us, and we always could use support, if you want to support some black art, some black-owned businesses, then you can go on ahead to patreon.com/forcolorednerds. You can donate some monies to help us continue to make this show. It costs money, costs time, costs effort. And at the end of the day, all that comes down to cash. So if you got some, we need it. Help us out. We take as little as $1 a month, and we take up to just about anything that you want to hand out. Additionally, we have merch. Yes. We have like awesome t-shirts. We have mugs that Eric and I drink out of at work.
Yes.
We also have tote bags, which I carry from time to time. Every once in a while, I end up carrying the tote bag, like when I am going someplace where I'm going to end up like talking about the show. And then I'm like, that's kind of weird. But I'm supporting a black-owned business.
So there you go. So no shame.
Kiss my butt. Get a t-shirt or a mug.
Or a tote bag.
Or a tote bag from shop.forcolorednerds.com. Pay us a visit. Buy something for your family. Also, if you don't have any money.
Yes.
You can support us by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. Just let them know we're popping, we're here, we're black, we're not going anywhere. We don't die, we multiply. So yeah, this has been another episode of For Colored Nerds. Thank you so much for listening.
We're hosted by Brittany Luce and myself, Eric Eddings, and we are produced by Bethel Hopte. And yeah, that has been our show.
Yep. You said that like we have more staff.
Don't have more staff.
And nope, we only have Bethel. All we need.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
We'll be back soon. Stay black. Or if you're not, stay what you are. Bye.
Bye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.